The elderly woman found me between the blue dresses and the emergency exits. That is how I remember it. Rack on my left. Exit sign glowing red behind her. My own hand gripping a hanger so tightly the plastic bit my palm. I had chosen the department store because it opened early and attracted women who wanted quiet, not spectacle. I was wrong about the quiet. Every sound reached me. Hangers scraping metal. Register beeps. Shoes on tile. A child arguing with her mother near the escalator. My own pulse under the wig cap. Rebecca had been outside before, but not often. My name is Russell Dane. I am 41, with warm brown skin, close-cropped hair, and shoulders shaped by years of carrying boxes in my family's grocery store. As Rebecca, I wear a shoulder-length black wig, gold hoops, light foundation, and clothes soft enough to make me notice the air. Today, I wore dark jeans, ankle boots, and a cream sweater under my coat. The dress in my hand was blue. I had almost stayed home. The first outfit felt wrong. The second felt too young. The third made me look like I was applying for a job at a bookstore I did not deserve. I changed four times while the department store opening time crept closer on my phone. Public Rebecca requires planning. Keys in the outside pocket. Lipstick that does not smear under a mask, though fewer people wear masks now. Flat shoes if escape becomes necessary. A store with gender-neutral restrooms within walking distance. A phrase ready if someone stares. May I help you? It sounds polite. It also gives the stare something to do. There are other rules too, the ones I hate admitting even to myself. Never wear the good wig if rain is likely. Never choose a skirt on a windy day. Never enter a store if a group of teenage boys is blocking the doors, because courage has limits and I do not owe strangers my whole nervous system. Never shop where my cousins might go. Never use a credit card if I am already frightened, because statements have names and names have consequences. My sister knows some of these rules, not all. She is the only person in my family who knows Rebecca exists, and even with her, I ration the truth. I tell her about the lipstick shade, not the hour spent staring at the front door. I tell her when a blouse fits, not when I return it, because the saleswoman said "sir" before I spoke. The night before, she texted me a photograph of a blue scarf in a shop window. "This color would be beautiful on you." I wrote back, "Maybe on someone braver." She answered, "Bravery is just repeated embarrassment with better shoes." That was very her. Annoying, practical, and difficult to dismiss. I went to bed angry enough to set an alarm. I did not need it on the bus. A teenager looked up from his phone, then went back to whatever bright thing had his attention. A woman with grocery bags moved hers so I could sit. My reflection in the bus window wavered over traffic and shop signs, Rebecca and Russell layered by dirty glass. By the time I reached the store, I had used half my courage on transportation. Not navy, not teal, something between sky and cornflower, with a wrap waist and sleeves that would forgive my arms. I liked it instantly, which made me suspicious of it. Then she appeared. She was small, white-haired, and dressed in a lavender coat with pearl buttons. She carried three scarves over one arm and had the fearless posture of someone who had returned many things in her life. "That blue would look lovely with your complexion, dear," she said. My body prepared for injury and received a compliment instead. "Oh," I said, "not my finest work." She touched the sleeve. "Not me. The cut is good, too." "You want the waist to sit here, not down there. Otherwise, it drags the whole dress south." I looked at her. She looked at the dress. "I am not sure about the size," I said. "No one is. That is why stores invented fitting rooms and bad lighting." She introduced herself as Mrs. Calder and took charge without asking permission in the way some older women do, not rudely, efficiently. She found two sizes, rejected one because the zipper looked cheap, and handed me a second blue dress with a better seam. "Try this one," she said. I almost fled. Instead, I went to the fitting room. Inside, under a light that forgave nothing, I took off my sweater and put on the dress. The first size pulled across the shoulders, the second settled. The blue warmed my skin, The wrap waist gave me a shape I had not expected and did not fully trust. I opened the door a crack. Mrs. Calder waited on the bench with her scarves folded beside her. "Well," she said. I stepped out. She smiled. Not the tight smile people use when they are proud of themselves for being polite. A shopping smile. Ordinary. Appraising. Almost bored by the absence of crisis. "There," she said. "That is the one." My throat tightened. "You think so?" "I know so. Turn." I turned. "Good. You need a smoother line under it, but that is everyone's business and no one's shame." I laughed because the alternative was crying in a department store. She glanced at my face then, really looked, and softened by one degree. "First blue dress?" she asked. "First one in public." Ah, that small word held more tact than many speeches. Mrs. Calder did not ask the question people think they are entitled to ask. She did not ask my real name. She did not ask how long. She did not ask whether my family knew, whether I was brave, whether I was sure, whether I had considered some other word for myself. She only adjusted the shoulder seam with two fingers and frowned at the mirror. "The sleeve is behaving," she said. "That is rare at this price. I do not usually buy dresses in person. Online dresses lie with professional ease. So do fitting room mirrors. This one is only mildly dishonest." That made me laugh. In the mirror, Rebecca laughing looked less like someone waiting for impact. Mrs. Calder caught that too. "There you are." The phrase almost broke the moment. It came too close to naming what I had not offered. Then she turned to the rack behind her and ruined the danger by saying, "Now do not buy the pink one. It has no respect for anyone." I loved her a little for that. She told me about her first red dress in 1968. She had bought it after leaving a husband who hated color. She wore it to a matinee alone and spent the whole film worrying people thought she looked foolish. "No one cared," Mrs. Calder said. I was furious. I had prepared so much courage. I understood that too well. Then she asked whether I had somewhere to wear the dress. My first instinct was to lie. A dinner, a friend's birthday, a little event downtown. Something that made Rebecca sound like a woman with a calendar, instead of a woman with a locked bedroom door. "Home," I said. Mrs. Calder nodded, as if home were not a consolation prize. "Good," she said. "Clothes should learn the house before they learn the street." "You make it sound like training a dog. More like teaching a room to recognize you." I looked at myself in the mirror again. The department store room had bad carpet, worse lighting, and hooks that barely held the discarded sweater. Still, the blue dress had changed its terms. I was not hiding in the room. I was trying something in it. "Can I ask you something?" I said. "You may. I may answer badly." "Did you know?" Mrs. Calder adjusted one of her scarves. "Know what, dear?" I gave her a look. It was not brave, exactly, but it was tired of pretending the question was clever. She did not make me say more. "I knew you were frightened," she said. "I knew the dress mattered. The rest is your business, unless you invite me into it." That answer was better than certainty. Certainty would have made me an object of study. Her restraint let me stay whole. "My name is Rebecca," I said. "Then Rebecca," she said, with no pause at all, "buy the blue dress if you can afford it. If you cannot, take my number and I will argue with the manager about discounts until everyone is sorry." I laughed so hard I had to press my hand to the waist tie. "I can afford it." "Excellent. I am only moderately in the mood for war." At the register, the cashier folded the dress into tissue. Mrs. Calder bought one scarf and told me not to let anyone talk me into beige. "Beige has its place," she said, "mostly under soup." I carried the bag home like it contained glass. The bus ride back felt different in the least dramatic way. No music rose, no stranger stared with cinematic recognition. I had a paper bag, damp hair at the nape of my neck, and one knee bouncing because nerves do not respect completed errands. At my stop, I almost kept riding. There is a particular fear that appears after success. Failure has a script. You retreat, You scold yourself. You promise to try later. Success asks for maintenance. Success says, now you know this is possible. What will you do with that information? I got off the bus and walked home through light rain. The bag bumped against my leg. A man held the door for me at the entrance to my building without looking up from his phone. Thanks, I said. Sure. My voice sounded lower than I wanted. He did not react. Inside the elevator, I looked at myself in the mirror. Rebecca looked back with rain dots on her wig and one hoop earring turned backward. I fixed it, then stopped myself from apologizing to an empty elevator. My apartment greeted me with its usual accusations. Dishes in the sink, unfolded towels, mail I had been avoiding because one envelope carried my old name in aggressive capital letters. I placed the shopping bag on the kitchen table and stood there too long. For a while, I did not put the dress on. I made tea. I wiped the counter. I checked the weather. I did all the little tasks people do when they are afraid of joy. Now I am wearing the dress in my apartment. The tags sit on the kitchen table. The receipt is beside them. My boots are by the door. Rain taps the window. The blue is exactly right. Mrs. Calder was right about the waist, the sleeves, the color, and maybe the anger of unused courage. I keep waiting for the moment to become larger. It does not. That is what makes it precious. I call my sister before taking the tags off. She answers on the third ring, breathless, with a child shouting in the background. Everything okay? She asks. Yes, I bought a dress. As Rebecca? Yes. The background noise lowers. I picture her stepping into the pantry, the only quiet room in her house. How did it go? I look at the blue in the mirror. A woman helped me find my size. Was she kind? Normal. My sister understands why that matters. She goes quiet for a moment. Send me a picture? I almost say no. Instead, I angle the phone so the mirror catches the dress and not the laundry basket. Her reply comes while I am still holding my breath. She was right about the color. I sit on the edge of the bed and read the message four times. Then another one arrives. Can I call you Rebecca today? The question is small enough to fit on a screen and large enough to rearrange the room. My sister could have assumed. She could have turned kindness into momentum and momentum into pressure. Instead, she asks, that is why I can answer. Yes. The phone rings before I decide whether I am ready for it. Hi, Rebecca, she says. No choir, no lightning. Just my sister in a pantry, whispering so her children do not demand snacks through the door. Hi, I say, and my voice catches on the way out. You okay? Yes. That sounded like not yes. It is a yes with complications. Those are our family specialty. We talk for 12 minutes about the dress, about Mrs. Calder, about how I still have the receipt and might keep it as evidence that the morning happened. My sister tells me her youngest has drawn on the dog with washable marker. I laugh as Rebecca, wearing the blue dress in my own bedroom, and the sound does not feel like an audition. After we hang up, I cut the tags off. That is the moment that frightens me most. Not the bus, not the fitting room, the scissors. Tags mean return is possible. Tags mean the dress is only visiting. Once the plastic loop snaps, the dress belongs to this apartment, and by extension, to me. I hold the little white tag in my palm. Then I tape it inside my journal. Not as a trophy, as a receipt from an ordinary morning. No revelation, no crowd. No declaration, just one woman in a lavender coat treating Rebecca as another woman with a fitting room problem. I stand before the mirror and turn once, as instructed. The dress moves cleanly. For tonight, normal is not small. It is the whole blue room.